Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
This episode is brought to you by ABC. Station 19 is back for its final and hottest season yet. Andy finally becomes captain, and she's going to give it her all to be the best leader the station has ever seen. Will she succeed? Get ready for fiery new romances and high adrenaline rescues. Watch the Station 19 season premiere Thursday at a new time, 10, 9 central on ABC and stream on Hulu.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Ben Hull is going to be here the entire hour. He's author of Saved, A War Reporter's Mission to Make It Home. Podcast is great, Searching for Heroes with Benjamin Hull. He's got a big ego. He has to put his name in everything. Including his Twitter handle, Benjamin Hull, FNC. We're about to talk to him in just a moment. And, of course, we'll take your calls. We're following all the breaking news. The President of the United States is going to be in New Hampshire today. I don't know what the former president's doing. We know on Tuesday, Robert Hur will be front and center. Remember, he did the report on illegal documents held in the president's possession in his garage by his Corvette, University of Delaware, and elsewhere. Well, he's going to be explaining that. That should be interesting. So before we get to Ben, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
It is a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel. The defense of Israel is still critical. So there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have. But there's red lines that if it crosses, and they cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead.
Well, we don't even know if there's 30 dead, because that is Hamas's line. Israel gets the red line. Yes, Joe Biden continues to get every major policy decision wrong and caves to the left, his left. He decides Hamas can't be attacked in Rafah, basically ending all hostage talks by showing some weakness. I'll explain.
Number two.
In terms of cost, that's been a major issue. And by the way, that's been a major issue in every wealthy country. This is an example of something that was largely affected by COVID. But I think there's a reason why inflation in the U.S. is lower than it is in any of the other G7
countries. It's actually
countries.
Not true.
Because Germany has a lower one, so does France. Lost in the spin of the State of the Union was his twist on the economy. His deficit reduction claims have reduced inflation and vilification of the wealthy. Why are we so angry at wealthy people, Mr. Biden? It's about time to get a reality check. We'll go through it.
Number one.
No one can explain that. Talk about disgusting. Joe Biden is more worried about using the word illegal or undocumented. The word he should use is murderer.
Absolutely. Killer. Either one. They are off. Biden and Trump in full stride over the weekend as we look at the issues that will decide November's winner. Immigration is the lead issue. And why the reliable race card just might not work this time. And what Senator Scott was talking about is the president in an interview walked back and apologized for saying that the murderer of Laken Riley was illegal. He said, I should have said undocumented. Yes, we're worried about offending the killers now. It makes no sense. Maybe it does to Ben Hull, fresh off his trip to the UK. He's going to be here all week. Ben, great to see you.
Hey, what a pleasure, Brian. Good to see you again.
I mean, first off, will you... What is your view of this debate on illegal immigrants? You find out about this woman gets killed jogging, and this guy has already committed a crime in New York. Him and his two brothers are just walking crime machines, and this guy becomes a killer, and the president clarifies what he means by that definition. Does this astound you?
I don't understand how there isn't a clearer black and white to what is wrong and what is right. And if there is someone who's in the country illegally and they're committing crimes, they shouldn't be allowed anywhere near here. And you better be checking every single person who crosses that border, because they're going to commit crimes if they're criminals. They are. It doesn't seem to be a political debate on it. It is common sense. And you speak to any family member of someone who has been killed by an illegal immigrant, and they would say exactly the same.
Right. And here's what I find it's messaging. It's that at one point, I think people just get astounded that we're wrestling over labeling someone. And if they would actually apologize for anything, you could say, hey, I got her name wrong. At the State of the Union address, I called her Lincoln. It should be Lincoln. My apologies. I wasn't even going to mention her name, but someone handed me a button with her name on it, and that was Marjorie Taylor Greene. So the illegal immigration thing is big. In England, it's pretty big. You guys just send them to Nairobi or something like that.
No, yeah, but for the last year or so, the Conservatives have been trying to send them all to Rwanda.
Rwanda.
And they have paid Rwanda hundreds of millions of pounds so far. They've set up these centers where they can go. But again, the left over there has put a hold on it. They prevented them from doing so. So they've had planes ready to go, but no one's being sent. And the number of people now crossing by boat is rising, is also at a dramatic high right now. So look, the Conservatives, like the Republicans over here, are trying to shut it down. And Labour, like the Democrats, are trying to effectively allow them all to come in. So it's political. It's nothing more than political.
Right. And right now, I could not believe the level of protests in the streets of London against Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Pro-Hamas, pro-Palestinian. Are you surprised by it?
Look, I mean, the discussion about what's happening in Gaza is very complicated. It goes back in history. You can talk about what should be happening now. But the one thing that I think everyone should agree on, and which they don't, is that this is a war that was started by Hamas. It was a war that was started when they murdered.
They don't agree with that?
No. They look before that. They say that Hamas did this because the way they had been treated, that they were in this open-air prison, etc. And I've spoken to them on the streets, and they do not see that the beginning of this war was the attacks that Hamas carried out, the children they killed, the prisoners they took hostage. That's not how they see this. And that is remarkable. And if you talk – and I was in Israel recently. And if you talk to any Israeli, they say, we very simply, this comes to an end. We just want our hostages back right now. We need Hamas to be defeated. But the people on the streets of London, 100,000 at a time some days, closing down the city once a week at the moment, they don't see that. They see Israel as the evil warlord that is killing civilians, and they don't look back to the terrorists that carried out October 7th.
But the government doesn't feel that way. David Cameron, does he feel that way? The foreign minister?
No. And the Conservatives have stood up and said that these marches need to stop, that they are creating a lot of havoc, that it's when you call out from the river to the sea, that is genocide, right, et cetera. But many of the people don't believe that.
Here's what the prime minister said to us on Fox and Friends about this whole movement and the need to go. Rafah is the last holdout. It's where about 1 million people are. And there's a humanitarian corridor we understand being set up. And here's what he said about why they have to continue. Cut 58.
They're there in Rafah. This would be equivalent to saying, you know, after the Allies fought back, gone through Normandy, went through Germany, and you'd say, well, we'll leave a quarter of the Nazi army in place and we won't go into Berlin, the last stronghold. So I think that if the president means by that we should first enable the safe departure of the civilian population from Rafah before we go in, we agree with that. We don't need any prompting.
That's not what he said.
Let's make sure that
that's not what he said. He doesn't want you to go in.
You know, I think you have to ask him what he said, because he agrees. He said that he agrees that we have to destroy Hamas as a fighting organization. That's what we intend to do. Look, it's either Israel or Hamas. There's no middle way. I mean, we have to have that victory. We can't have three quarters of a victory. We can't have two-thirds of a victory, because Hamas will reconstitute itself with these four battalions in Rafah, reconquer the Gaza Strip, and do the October 7th massacre over and over and over again. And for us in Israel, not merely for me,
Mr. Prime
but
Minister,
for the people of Israel,
you know,
that's
right,
a red
so,
line.
So that is, that. The, you know, that's rough. He's going to ignore the politics of it. But there's no doubt about it, they set a red line. The other thing is, multiple reports said, as soon as the U.S. showed a fracture and showed pushback to Netanyahu on Rafah, that's when the hostage deal fell apart.
Yeah, and look, Hamas knows this. That's sadly the message that the Biden administration has been sending. When you heard him after the State of the Union saying he was going to have a come-to-Jesus talk, messages like that don't work well, and they work in Hamas's favor. Hamas knows that if they can the longer they wait, the more the world will turn against Israel. And look, Hamas have never worried about the death of their own civilians. The more of the Palestinians who die, the stronger Hamas feels they are because the world turns against Israel. And that's what's so sad about this. And the other thing about Rafah is it's not just where a quarter of the Hamas fighters still are. It also borders Egypt. And that's where Hamas continues to get all its weapons. Unless Israel goes in and takes over Rafah, then that flow of weapons will continue.
I understand there's a Philadelphia corridor. Is it a tunnel that goes from Egypt into Gaza? And when they gave up Gaza, when Sharon gave up Gaza without a negotiation, they gave up that pathway and they got to shut that down?
I'm not sure of the specific one, but I've been up in Egypt along that border, and there are countless tunnels, some from miles back, some from closer. You know, these are tunnels that for decades they've been bringing.
You could drive trucks through them.
No, exactly. You do. They bring cars into some of them. I mean, it's open for all.
And the one thing they did discover when they went in there wasn't an open-air prison. Palestinians are living a lot better than they were indications are. And people have to understand there's an underground network where Hamas was living and thriving.
Totally. And if you've actually seen some of the pictures of some of the coastlines and the beach clubs along in Gaza, you know, yes, people in Gaza, they couldn't travel into Israel. That's understood. But that started because there were continued terror attacks on Israel. And eventually, after many years, the Israeli government said, we'll just build a wall around them. So, yes, they weren't allowed to leave. But inside Gaza, there was the quality of life was fine. People were doing well. But it would have been a lot better if Hamas hadn't used every single penny they were given on building tunnels and building rockets. If they'd spent a fraction of that money helping the people, building hospitals, creating schools, Gaza would have become a real success zone. And that's what Israel had been hoping for. And it's gone in the other direction.
And if you look at Hamas, they have to be heartened by the fact that President of the United States was late to a State of the Union because of protests for them. Mm-hmm. And what about the fact even the Oscars started late because of the protests? The celebrities had to get out of their cars and walk to the theater, the Kodak Theater. I mean, it's terrible. But just to show you, they want to get the most high-profile event. They want to stop it, and they feel by holding out, they're winning over world sentiment.
They do, and I think they are. I mean, if you just watch the coverage in the media of what's happening there compared to 4 months ago, look, today it is going in one direction, that Israel must stop, that Israel is, has not achieved its goals, but many people say that Israel must stop now because they've sent a message. But Netanyahu clearly said there has been one goal from the beginning. It has to be the destruction of Hamas, and that's when it will stop.
Benjamin Hall's here. He's got his podcast. It is called, by the way, his book is a bestseller too, but his podcast, Searching for Heroes with Benjamin Hall. You get it wherever you get your podcast. When we come back, an issue that's really dear to your heart, and that's Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And what Senator Lindsey Graham brought up over the weekend, see if that will fly. Don't move.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
If anybody in this room thinks Putin will stop at Ukraine, I assure you he will not. But Ukraine can stop Putin. Ukraine can stop Putin. If we stand with Ukraine and provide the weapons that needs to defend itself.
And that was President Biden's State of the Union. He did get some applause for that. But what are Republicans willing to do? Because the slow walking of weapons, the lack of accountability, the lack of communication on the policy has created a lot of resentment. And they're using the border as leverage to get something from Joe Biden that they want in exchange for something that he wants. Has led to an impasse. It's got to be frustrating for Benjamin Hall, who almost lost his life just reporting on a war and saw the bravery that Zelensky and the Ukrainians have shown, defying the odds, and here we are 2 years into this war. Benjamin, looking at the UK, from the UK, were you stunned that we're having this debate about aid? And now what have you discovered upon looking at the political corners both sides are in.
Mm, it'd been such a U-turn. If you look what happened in 2022 when Russia invaded, there was this unified cause to push Russia back. And we saw the effect of that on the battlefield. Ukraine was pushing Russia back. They were winning victories. They were doing well.
They're better fighters.
Mm-hmm. And instead, what we have seen is that reverse. The weapons have stopped. Ukraine, and I speak to people out there at the moment, on the front lines, they do not have enough weapons to fire. Russia is taking ground, taking the city of Avdiivka. You know, it's not a huge city, but it's very critical. It's the first time we've seen a change, and we are seeing Russia realize, not just because of its gains on the battlefield, but also because it's looking around the U.S., it's looking around Western countries, it's realizing that the political support for arming Ukraine is dripping away, and they feel that not this year, but in the next few years, Russia wants to capture all of Ukraine. Russia has been very clear of that. They're not going to stop, and they've geared up their economy for a long-term war. They've geared up their weapons manufacturing for a long-term war. They are not stopping, and I know you hear European leaders saying, after Ukraine, it's going to be other countries. Well, personally, I think there's a good chance of that. I think someone like Putin, just from a personal manner, is someone who wants total victory. He's someone who wants to leave his legacy on the world. And he's talked about these in his hours and hours long speeches. He wants to make a change and he wants Russia to grow strong. And he will go into places like the Baltic or Moldova or Transnistria.
Of course.
And we think that may well happen if
Transnistria is part of Moldova, right?
It's part of Moldova, but it's been declared a separatist area. I've been there. I went there a few years ago. It looks like the Cold War. I mean, it really is out of the 60s. They haven't changed at all, but they have recently declared that they want support from Russia. It's a critical moment. It's that part of land that separates Ukraine from Moldova. Moldova's already in a politically interesting situation where you have pro-Russian supporters there. And so that's one country where Russia is looking to descend.
And Georgia, too. They haven't left Georgia, and they're trying to get involved in the political process.
And Serbia
as
well.
So here we go. So here's Lindsey Graham, who obviously, like Michael Waltz and even Speaker Johnson, know it's vital that we support Ukraine. But they're in this political turmoil right now. So here's Lindsey Graham's idea. Cut 28.
We're $34 trillion in debt. Nobody wants to help Ukraine more than I do. But President Trump is trying to do two things here. Help an ally, but tell the American people, pay us back if you can. I think most Americans would like to help Ukraine, but the idea of giving and never being repaid should be off the table. He mentioned this to me, I think, playing golf. Why don't we make it a loan? Well, we did that in World War II with Britain. So when you're $34 trillion in debt, you need to be thinking about the American people, just not allies. So I think the loan is the way to get the aid to Ukraine. He will be speaking, President Trump, to the speaker tomorrow or Tuesday about turning the aid into a loan. It'd be forgivable, no interest. They have tons of minerals in Ukraine. You get back on your feet, try to pay us back.
Your thoughts?
I think whatever has to be done to get the money there is what politicians will be looking at right now. Look, I do think that one of the big problems here is explaining to Americans who understand their debt that this isn't just about helping Ukraine win in Russia. This has huge knock-on effects. And I think that's the message that is being lost. I think you talk about the message that is being sent to countries like China, potentially Taiwan, or the message that could be sent to any dictator or any country that feels it might take a piece of another country. Those were laws that were bound, you know, since World War II, to be honest. And that's slipping away. And right now, the war in Ukraine might not appear to threaten anyone in America. Sure, it doesn't. You know, there are bigger problems here. You've got economy, et cetera. But, you know, I'm of the belief that it does lead to something, that if conflicts like this and invasions like this aren't stopped, it leads to other things. And so, look, if you have
goodbye, Taiwan. I mean, what is the message?
100%.
Message, wait, it'll be a tough year, and then America's interests will fade.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, congratulations on your book. A bestseller. Now it's out on paperback, Saved, A War Reporter's Mission to Make It Home. So you're talking about that, too, now, right?
I'm talking about that at the moment, mainly because this week is the second anniversary of the attack in Ukraine as well. So first of all, we've got to talk about Pierre, Sasha, my cameraman and the producer. They died out there. And so, look, we're 2 years in at the moment, and I think we've got to – the book talks about them a lot, but I think it's also time to remember journalism as well and to remember those people who risk their lives so that our viewers – and listeners can get the news. And so that's one of the reasons I want to talk about it this week. Evan Gushkovitz is being held inside Russia right now. These are journalists like you, like me, like so many people here who are out there to bring the news over. And that's why I think it's essential we talk about it and remember these people.
Right. And also, there are good guys and bad guys. Ben is one of the good guys. Ben, thanks so much. Pick up Save today. Thanks, Ben.
Hey, thanks so much.
Also, check out his podcast, Searching for Heroes with Benjamin Off. Don't move.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I think the bigger issue is that TikTok has become a news delivery vehicle, an entertainment vehicle. If you mashed all the different networks together, it's not as big as TikTok. And so they have unfettered access to the American people, and they're obviously we can't, our companies can't operate in China in any way whatsoever. It's not even unfettered in any style. So I think there's a lot of support for it. I think TikTok's overplayed its hand by putting up these notifications and getting young people to call their representatives. It's made them more steeled to pass this, and President Biden will sign it.
While having an account open for his campaign, and why talking to influencers who are on TikTok? And that is Karen Swisher, who wrote a book about this. You know, I don't know if Democrat or Republican just talks about the manipulation of social media for American society and how detrimental it's been, and intentionally detrimental, but none as sinister, I don't think, as TikTok. And now, just to give you an update, yesterday, last week, they voted 50-0 on the Energy Committee to ban TikTok unless they sell 80% of their company to an American entity. Sell 80, ByteDance, the owner, which is directly affiliated to the Chinese government, have to sell if you want to keep it here. That's it. Huge lobbyists are trying to threaten, like Club for Growth, trying to threaten Republicans, don't get behind this. The former president of the United States says, I don't want to clear out TikTok and give Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook more territory with Instagram and Facebook because of what they did in the last election. And, Mr. President, I can understand what you're saying, but the number one issue is to stop the Chinese influence within our country through their news feed, reaching 175 million people. And you saw their impact, because as soon as they found out that a ban was coming for TikTok, TikTok sent a message out to all their followers. Write your congressman, put in your zip code, and I'll tell you exactly who to, what the email is and what to write. That's the power. Do you want an entity owned by China to have so much power with our next generation? The ranking member of the House Select Committee, Congressman Rasha Kushermith, said this on CNN about TikTok. Democrat, Mike Gallagher, the Republican, cut 35.
Basically, what they did is they did a push notification pop-up that required people to call their representative in order to access the app. But what ended up happening is that minor children ended up flooding offices with these calls, and they called the offices and said stuff like, what is Congress? What's a congressman? Can I have my TikTok back? One person called one legislator and impersonated his son. And so this is exactly the reason why so many people ended up voting for the bill, because TikTok used the geolocation data of minor children's locations to then spread misinformation about the bill. And it turned a bunch of lean yeses into hard yeses on that day.
Yes, I hope so. And look, I don't care about these lobbyists. And I know there's American investors making a lot of money. I don't care. It's America first in more ways than just words. It's not a matter of flying your flag. It's a matter of where you're going to invest and what's in the best interest of this generation. Don't tell me you want kids to put their phones away, but you don't want to ban TikTok because you're making some money. Here's more from him. Cut 36.
Your location would be known. Secondly, your any personal identifiable information, any messages, any sensitive data that you entrust to the apps on your phone that TikTok could get access to. We know that they have nefariously used some of this data in the past. Forbes recently wrote articles saying that some of their reporters were targeted for reporting on TikTok. And so this is a grave concern.
So is the Energy and Commerce Committee voted 50-0. So they're going to put that up this week for a vote. And the president says he'll sign it. What I find terrible is just a lack of leadership. The State of the Union, what I hated most about it, it was a political speech. What are you doing? You're running the country. You have the job. Be a leader first. Next, when it comes to this, you say, listen, I know that's where young people are, but I can't do it. How can I say that I got to be tough on China at the same time subscribe to their number one propaganda device? I can't believe they were able to put together an algorithm better than ours that we could not match. I don't know how they did it. Really don't know. You know, that's not my thing. I'm not going to unwind and make something better, but I thought other people looking to make money take that as a challenge. We usually answer the call. We don't answer this call for this one. Instagram changed a lot of their approach. Nobody I know really talks about Facebook that much anymore. But with the president, former president of the United States came out and said, and using a disparaging name for Zuckerberg, He went out last election, used Zuckerbucks in key districts in order to make sure that Joe Biden had the best messaging in the key areas to get the maximum votes. He said he worked both sides, and he didn't. When it came to he didn't own Twitter, but when it came to shadow banning on Facebook and on Instagram, that was taking place. So Trump, of course, is ticked off. He doesn't want to open up the marketplace for more Zuckerberg propaganda, even though they said they've dialed it back and on their news feed, and they're going to diminish if you do write something political. How many people see you? I'm already seeing it on mine. When I do something political, it does not nearly get the traction. Here's Mark Warner, another Democrat, cut 33.
If you don't think the Chinese Communist Party can twist that algorithm to make it the news that they see reflective of their views, then I don't think you appreciate the nature of the threat. Would the United States ever allow China to buy CBS? I don't think they would. And we might have slightly different ways on how we go at this, but we think this is a national security issue.
Yes, of course. And that's what was so great. That's why I wanted you to hear that with a Democratic president. And Margaret Brennan asked a good question to Mark Warner, cut 32.
The Biden campaign joined TikTok,
Senator Warner. And I said that sends a pretty darn mixed message because the Biden administration supported my earlier bipartisan legislation that we would lead to a path of potentially banning TikTok, because I believe that TikTok, both controlled by the Chinese Communist Party, both collects data and as a news source, literally half of young people in America get a lot of their news all from TikTok.
All right. So obviously Mike Gallagher feels the exact same way. Now, what makes it complicated is what I just told you about the former president. And every Republican wants to do what Donald Trump wants you to do. He's got more power now than he had when he was president, I think. Case in point, Lindsey Graham. We all know to ban TikTok is the right thing, correct? But listen to Lindsey Graham now, cut 37.
I think the goal is to make sure American data that TikTok collects doesn't fall in the hands of the Communist Chinese Party. I'm really conflicted here. I knew this about social media. They're ruining America. They're sexual predators abound on these sites. You can't sue social media companies. There's no regulatory body. That's what I'm focused on. Banning TikTok, maybe that's necessary to protect American data from China. But if you can find a way to avoid that, that'd be good, too.
Who can find a way to avoid that? I don't understand that statement. Technologically, we can't close the back door, and China gets all our information. They find out what we're thinking. They're able to influence what we are thinking. And the whole next generation is on TikTok. This is an easy issue. Easy issue. You tell the president, former president, President Donald Trump, sorry, it's banned. Just like Ukraine's got to get funded. You can respect someone and disagree. And I'll tell you, President Trump, he might get mad, but I think he respects if you come back and go, sorry, Mr. President, there's got to be a different hedge against Facebook and Instagram, and Twitter is no problem anymore. X is no problem anymore, thankfully, because of Elon Musk. But the campaign, he pushed back. This is it. This is done. And look, it is not to kill it. Make America, American investment will buy it. Many other countries have banned it, because they don't want the influence of China on in their country winning the next election, picking the next candidate. I think it has a lot to do with those demonstrations that we're seeing in the street, blocking celebrities or the audience from entering the Oscars, blocking the president from getting to the State of the Union. You interrupt Adam Schiff, my goodness, this left-wing lunatic who wants to be the next senator from California. He tries to do a victory speech. They're breaking it up. Where are these young people getting this anti-Israeli information? Well, let's just look at logic. Their number one source for news is TikTok. And what could cause the greatest amount of angst in our society and tension among the masses? That. And because a conflict props up, they get a point of view and they get people at each other's throats. Those people happen to be Americans. So when we come back, I want to talk a little politics. Some polls are in I find fascinating. Also, when you take a look at the African-American vote, it is going to the right. Not as fast as I think it could, but right now it's already in double figures. Now, you don't think that's a big deal. It is when you realize that Mitt Romney, the least offensive candidate in the history of the Republican Party, could only get 8% of the vote. John McCain, 9% of the vote. Trump has more than doubled it. How has he done it? We'll discuss that. And I want to get your calls on that. 1-866-408-7669. You can write me at briankilmeade.com. Click on questions and comments. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Well, I think it's a couple reasons. I think primarily it's economic. I mean, if we're coming out of this very high inflationary period, it's cooled, but still, you know, food costs, housing costs, these are higher percentages of people's take-home budgets. And so if you're a working-class American of any color, you have really been impacted by that. And so voters overwhelmingly consider Trump, the Trump economy, to have worked better for them than the Biden economy. And so that's affected Black Americans.
And that is a Meet the Press moment. Sarah Fagan worked, said that on Meet the Press, saying, you know, why is he winning in every major poll? Why is he doing looked at as better as a leader? Why is he looked better on the economy? That's basically it. Also, when asked about African-Americans, it's pretty significant because this must really scare Democrats. Because right now, according to CBS, Biden gets 76% of the black vote, but Trump gets 23. Romney got 8. McCain got 9. In a Gallup poll in 2021, 13% of the black vote went to Trump. In 2023, he's up to 19 on a Gallup poll, also co-sponsored by NBC. That's like you can't win if that doesn't go back to the Democrats had it. So, listen, not all bad. Looks like Joe Biden got $10 million after the State of the Union address. They definitely have more money than the Republicans. And Donald Trump has got to restructure the RNC because of that. And we know he's going with his daughter-in-law. And we'll see where that goes. So what I found that didn't get enough publicity on Thursday was, okay, the rank and file, the partisan views. But when he started doing what he always does, this country was built by unions, not by Wall Street. This billionaire's got to pay their fair share. Everyone's got to pay their taxes. Obviously, his son. Guns, taxes, international business deals with dicey countries like China. So then Gary Cohen, who's not the biggest Trump fan, but was significant with Trump. This is what he says. He's IBM vice chair right now. He's just for them face the nation about what the truth is about the tax code and about billionaires. Cut 46.
So when we redid taxes in 2017, the personal side of the tax code expires December 31st of 2025. So as of January 1st, 2026, we revert back to the very complicated tax code that we had in 2017. Mm-hmm. So people have to remember that. It was extremely complicated. You bring in all these things as personal deductions, itemized deductions. Now you bring in SALT deductions. We raise tax
state
rates.
And local taxes.
Right. We raise tax rates, but you bring in all the loopholes that we got rid of. So what we tried to do when we rewrote taxes is we tried to simplify it, and we tried to get rid of all the loopholes that basically the wealthy people in America use. And that was a way that we tried to make the tax code fairer. And the data shows that we've made the tax code fairer. If you actually look at who pays taxes in this country, the bottom 50% of earners in the United States pay 2.3% of tax collected. And the top 10% pays over 70% of tax collected in this country.
So did you hear that? Working class people, middle class people pay on average 2.3%. Billionaires, millionaires, the top 1%, 10% pay 70% of all the taxes. Why would you be vilifying them? And billionaires, it's important too, a further definition, because so many of us are billionaires. It's worth going over again. Cut 48.
I think you've got to take one little step back here. A billionaire is a measure of net worth. It's not a description of their taxable income. Mm-hmm. You could be a billionaire and have no taxable income. You could not have $1 billion and have a high taxable income. So when you look at the way
because
people
it could
are...
You're just sitting on assets.
You're just sitting on assets. And you could be sitting on illiquid assets. You could be sitting on liquid assets. We do a very good job in this country of taxing income. That's what the Constitution talks about. The Constitution talks about taxing your income. Mm-hmm. There is no income in this country, unless you buy a tax-free bond that doesn't get taxed at a minimum of 20%, whether it's interest or dividends or capital gains. So there's no billionaire in this country that has income that is not paying at least 20%.
So what he tried to do with the tax reform, and the president, former president, would be speaking about this all the time, he tried to do is bring lowering the corporate tax rate so it now made sense for American companies to bring their manufacturing and their companies home. But it didn't make any financial sense. So you might say, well, just do the right thing. Well, you can't really do the right thing in a public company. You could do the right thing, but you also have to maximize profits for investors within reason. So if I'm going to sit, I'll keep my headquarters in Ireland. That's where I'm going to go. I'm going to go off to Cayman Islands. But if you can get close to competitive, you can bring it back. And what they started to do under the previous administration is repatronizing these companies and bringing, to a degree, manufacturing back. Now, he is against the tariffs, and him and Trump fight about this. So if you don't make a product here and you're tariffing products that Americans want to buy, you're raising the price of that Tupperware, all right? They don't make it here. So if you bring it up here and we want to tariff China, they only make it in China, you'll up it. Now, my feeling is if you put the tariffs on Tupperware from China and they come here and they're more expensive, that'll be incentive to make it here cheaper. And if you do that and China says, you know, I can't sell my Tupperware in America anymore, you know, then they'll open up a market because they're not going to be making as much. America might be taking some back of their market, or they might be dealing with another country that is a little bit more friendly, that we can trust more. That's what I think Donald Trump was going at. Now, Gary Cohen was against it to a degree, unless we manufacture it here. Tariff somebody else to a degree while keeping fair trade practices in place. But while we have that, if we make that product here, I'd rather buy it from America. Okay, fine. But we don't make that product and you still want it. The consumer says, why are you charging me so much? Well, in the big picture, if I tariff it, then I bring it into market prices, then maybe it makes sense for me to make my own Tupperware here. In my humble opinion, without a prestigious economics degree from MIT, that's really what was explained over the weekend. And when the president of the United States goes out there and these billionaires don't pay any taxes, just pay your fair share, come on, you're not bad people, we're built by unions. Not really. I mean, federal government, I know U.S. Steel, federal government spun out on its own. You have unions with some of these major manufacturing bases. I get that. But for the most part, it's rich people, successful people, the smartest ones in your class who take risks and hire other people who can learn and eventually make their own companies from this or give people opportunities to earn their own wealth, become middle class, working class. The last thing I would ever do if I'm giving a speech to the country is mock people that are the most successful among us. Yeah, there's people that scammed their way up there. They're eventually going to pay the price. But for the most part, billionaires are the workaholics. They work around the clock. They take tremendous risk. They hire a lot of people. And they are fueling the economy. You should like them. Aspire to be them.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moment to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I hope you had a fantastic weekend. We're back in action today in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. We have so much to go over this week. I mean, I could not believe the volume of things happening. I guess I should get used to it. I guess we all should, because now we're really down to two candidates. We're not talking about primary Super Tuesday. We watched both candidates in Georgia over the weekend going at each other directly. Question is, can this current president keep up the pace? I know Trump can keep up the pace, no problem. And that without controversy, certainly disagreement. Michael Goodwin standing by to go over it. And Michael Howe, the executive director for the Oversight Project of the Heritage Foundation, will be joining us too. There is some division on a couple of things. On Ukraine when it comes to Republicans. Also, when it comes to TikTok when it comes to Republicans. I know where I stand. I want to find out where you stand too. Big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
This is a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel. The defense of Israel is still critical. So there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have. But there's red lines that if it crosses, and you cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead.
We don't know if there are 30,000 Palestinians dead. We're going by the Hamas Communications Division. Israel gets the red line. Joe Biden continues to get every major foreign policy wrong and cave to the left. He decides Hamas can't be attacked in Rafah, basically ending all hostage talks. I'll explain.
Number two.
In terms of cost, that's been a major issue. And by the way, that's been a major issue in every wealthy country. This is an example of something that was largely affected by COVID. But I think there's a reason why inflation in the U.S. is lower than it is in any of the other G7
countries. That's actually not true.
Shannon Bream came armed. Lost in the spin of the State of the Union was the president's twist on the economy. His deficit reduction. He did not reduce the deficit. Claims to have reduced inflation. Has not reduced inflation. Vilification of the wealthy. For me, unacceptable. Obviously divisive.
Number one.
No one can explain that. Talk about disgusting. Joe Biden is more worried about using the word illegal or undocumented. The word he should use is murderer.
Thank you, Senator Scott. They are off. Biden and Trump, full stride over the weekend as we look at the issues that will decide November's winner. And by the way, Biden's in New Hampshire today. Immigration, the lead issue, and why the reliable race card just won't work this time. Quick, just a little reminder, if you ever miss the show, you have to leave your affiliate. You can go on the Fox News app, just click on watch, and you can actually see the cameras. We've got Fox Nation here. Let's bring in Michael Goodwin. Michael, welcome back.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you.
First off, I didn't get your take on the address. What did you think of the State of the Union?
I thought it was maddening, the shouting, all of that. And as I write in the column, I mean, the partisanship, I thought, was way over the line. I mean, there's always some of it, the attack, direct attack on the Supreme Court. I mean, it's very much like Barack Obama. And I think that seems to be the new model of Democratic presidents is you just go at it all the time. There's never a respite. There's never any real sincere working with the other side. It's demonization, partisanship, lies, you know, just over the top all the time. I think it's a bad formula for a president, and I think it's very destructive to the country because as president, you've got to govern the whole country. You cannot just govern America for half of the people. But that imagery of the president at sort of the height of the, you know, from the inauguration to the State of the Union, that's when you sort of see the president at the height of the presidency. And to use it in such a blatantly partisan and nasty tone, I think, is a real disappointment. But it's become par for the course for the Democratic Party.
So one of the things that the president didn't have on prompter was Marjorie Taylor Greene gave him a button that said Lake and Riley. And he said it was Lincoln Riley. And he says here illegally. And they've killed thousands. Something to just nonsensical comment. So he felt as though he had to not apologize for getting her name wrong, but this, cut 10.
During your response to her heckling of you, you used the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Lake and Riley.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented. And look, when I spoke about the difference between Trump and me, one of the things I talked about on the border was that his, the way he talks about vermin, the way he talks about these people polluting the blood. I talked about what I'm not going to do, what I won't do. I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect. Look, they built the country. The reason our economy is growing, we have to control.
Okay, I can't even listen to that. The illegal immigrants, murderers, built the country. Immigrants built the country, you idiot. What are you talking about? Don't compare Ellis Island, previous generations, Irish famine, what we witnessed here in this country to what we're seeing now.
You know, Brian, I did some research on this recently, that in the great era of immigration that you refer to, roughly 1880 to 1920, about 12 million immigrants were admitted to the United States. Whatever the number is under Biden, whether it's 8, 9, 10 million even, including all the gotaways, it far dwarfs just the proportion of the country's population and everything, that the 40-year period of 12 million versus 3 years of maybe 8 or 9 or 10 million. I mean, it's outrageous, just the sheer volume. And then, of course, the fact that they're all, or most of them, are here illegally, even with an asylum claim. And for Biden to conflate that with the history of immigration. You know, I often think when he does this, of the people who are waiting in line, the people who have in their home countries have applied for to come to the United States, applied for visas, paid money for all of that, versus those who just find a cartel, hop on a train somewhere, and come to the United States, and then start to demand freedoms, handouts, rights. I mean, who taught them that this is the new America? Well, Joe Biden is teaching them now. You're not here. You're not an illegal. Undocumented. Oh, how sweet. How touching.
But do you know what else New York City is getting known for? The land of the forged document. So they're giving people licenses and green cards, which they say are flawless. That now these people, when they come here, we got 177,000 that have come through. They roughly 100,000 are being housed currently right now. Most of them in New York City. Now they go to 43rd Street and they all go over there with phony. The next thing you know, they're either working in kitchens or finding a way to get other jobs, knocking people out of the current jobs, or, you know, people are pretending to look the other way without any E-Verify, which evidently some Republicans are on for, too. So this president of the United States is trying to be politically correct and trying to say, I own immigration now because Republicans walked away from the bipartisan deal. When you go ahead and tell people Donald Trump is wrong to say vermin and I should have said undocumented for a murderer, I think it says a bigger story. The bigger story is this political correctness is getting us killed, and he is responsible for it.
Well, look, I think the overview, Brian, is that what the Democrats are doing is erasing this distinction between legal and illegal immigration. And when you do that, you are no longer a nation of laws. When you say that there's no ultimate distinction between coming here legally and coming here illegally, you're here and we're going to treat you with respect and kindness because you're here. I mean, how many people in the world want to come to the United States? And as we've seen, there's no end to the caravans that keep coming. People are flying to Central America to come to America, to come across the border. I mean, it's insane. We don't know who most of these people are. They are unvetted. And yes, their stories, many of their stories are tragic. Their countries are, you know, dramatically disgusting places with violence and child trafficking, narcotics. These are awful places, hell holes in many, many cases. But why do they do not have a right to come here? The Constitution of the United States is not a suicide pact. It doesn't mean we have to let everybody in who wants to come. And just because they came across illegally, we can feel sorry for the reasons that they made this dangerous voyage, but it doesn't put upon us the burden of accepting all comers. That's not the way a system of laws works.
So I want you to let's talk about the Trump trials for a second. Raphael Warnock was the designated speaker for President Biden on the Sunday shows. So he was asked about the embarrassment, which is Fani Willis and Nathan Wade, everything of which has been exposed. You'd think he would make a stand and say, step aside for the good of the case or something. But look at what he does. And this drives me nuts. Cut 42.
Do you still feel like Fani Willis is the best person to bring this case forward?
Well, I'm never surprised when I see Donald Trump attacking women, especially black women.
So this is nothing to do with Trump. These people are trying to put him in jail, gave him a mugshot. They're corrupt as the day is long. There's no ethics amongst them, been exposed by everybody. And he brings up women and black. I mean, how fed up are you with this?
Well, I think, Brian, when you track all of the Sunday interviews, right, George Stephanopoulos with Nancy Mace. Yeah, and Jonathan Capehart with President Biden, and then this one with Warnock. What are their answers? It's always the questioners or the Democratic interview people being interviewed. Their first response is always Trump. And I think that is what the training is teaching them. Whatever question is thrown at you, if your answer includes the word Trump, you will be fine with Democratic voters. It's how you get out of a fix among even your own supporters. If it's uncomfortable, if there is a legitimate issue here, once you say Trump, it's like a magic word. You know, it's like the old, was it the Groucho Marx, when you say the magic word, the duck comes out of the ceiling?
I forgot that.
That's what it is. You say Trump and you're off the hook.
Yeah, which is nuts. I'm not going to play the exchange. I found it a little redundant. But Nancy Mace, they said, well, you know, Nancy Mace was against the president, said after January 6th, you know, he should make him disqualified to be president. She goes, I have since have changed my mind when I see what's going on in the country and see what Joe Biden has done. And I got a different perspective on January 6th, whatever she said. And they said, well, you know, he was convicted in a civil trial of rape. He goes, well, that was a civil trial. And he goes, you're a rape victim. How could you go for him? Because that was a civil trial. And there was huge problems with that case. And she went out and bragged about the fact that she was getting an award and all the lavish things she would spend on. That's not what rape victims talk about. Meanwhile, George Stephanopoulos attacking Nancy Mace, who was raped, about her decision to attack Trump. This is the guy that worked for Bill Clinton. He had women as governor. He had women as president. He had women in the closet while Yasser Arafat was on the outside. This guy was linked to Epstein Island, and he would vote for him tomorrow.
Of course. But look, that's the Democrats. You know, if you say Trump, then everything else is forgiven. And Stephanopoulos is a Democratic operative. He always has been. I mean, the whole network television is a series of Democratic operatives. The whole MSNBC, CNN, they're all doing right. Joe Biden's work for him. That's what they do. That's why, frankly, Brian, I have not watched those shows for 20 years. Because I know what's coming. I don't want to be sitting there shouting at the television. So I prefer just to do something else.
I understand. I don't really have that option. but Michael, you know what I think? People are done with that Trump argument because what Joe Biden should be doing is going after Nikki Haley voters. And there's some never Trumpers, Liz Cheney's out there, and maybe they'll be open to Joe Biden, but not after they saw what he's done over the last 4 years. And number two is, for those people, and I like Nikki Haley, I keep saying this, just so people, if they just tune in, don't think I've turned on her. I still like her. But just understand, they would be attacking her almost at the same level without the court cases as they would Donald Trump. In a short period of time, you would think she was the worst governor in the history of South Carolina, the worst wife ever, the worst parent ever, the most insincere. Everything would have been brought up. You know, so the reason why she does better head-to-head with Joe Biden than Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump is because they said to themselves, we shouldn't touch her because she's not going to win and she's a good hedge against Trump. She's beating up on Trump. But don't people think when Trump's done, whether he gets it in November or he's done in 4 years from November, when he's done, do not think the next man or woman is going to be treated fairly. Do you agree?
Oh, yes. Look, I remember back when John McCain was the nominee for the Republican Party for president in 2008. And if you remember before that, the liberal media, New York Times, they loved John McCain. The minute he became the nominee, the Times ran a big piece about how he had an affair with a lobbyist. The lobbyist denied it. He denied it. Didn't matter. Front page. I mean, that's the way they get treated. It's always the same. And, I mean, just as a side note, the New York Times has not endorsed a Republican for president since Dwight Eisenhower
Wow.
in 1956. The Washington Post has never endorsed a Republican for president. That's the way they play the game. And the Republicans who fall for this are fools. I mean, look at the way Mitt Romney was treated once he became the nominee. Now they love him, right, because he hates Trump. Nikki Haley, as you suggest, will find the same reception at some point if she ever becomes the leader of the Republican Party. She's in a safe space now. She's a Republican. She's attracting Democrats by demonizing Trump. That's great. You'll get lots of good press for that. But don't ever mistake that for thinking they really like you or that they would ever support you as a Republican, because ultimately they hate Republicans. They revile them. Right. They think they're evil by birth, and they will go after them tooth and nail every yeah. time. And Nikki Haley should not be fooled by this false praise that she's getting.
Right. It's amazing how people move past in a matter of days. Hey, Mike Goodwin, always educational and interesting to talk to you. That's why everyone reads your column. Go at nypost.com. Michael Goodwin, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
All right. Listen, when we come back, I'm going to go over some of the court cases, because the first case coming up will be the Alvin Bragg case in New York, what it all means for the president who seems to be leading, the former president, who seems to be leading in almost every major poll. Don't move.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, just a quick note, History, Liberty, and Laughs. I'm going to be on stage talking about American history, inspirational, motivational, patriotic on stage. It's been going exceedingly well. And now that Teddy and Booker T is out and doing really well, I just want to talk about everything in general and giving you a sense of an unscripted stage show. And my next stop is going to be in Henderson, Nevada, April 27th. So that's coming up. Go to BrianKilmeade.com right now. Just go to my website. You'll see it. Get tickets, VIP opportunities. About 2 hours before the show, I'll just sit down and talk to everybody one-on-one, get all your questions out, do pictures, and sign any book that you have. And you get any of my books any moment, anytime at BrianKilmeade.com. Listen, when we come back, Michael Howe of The Heritage. Don't move.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Let's bring in Mike Howe. He is the executive director of the Oversight Project at the Heritage Foundation. And right now, if you look at what's happening with these both these candidates and what's going to be happening this week, first off, Robert Hur is going to be testifying tomorrow in front of Congress to bring some light onto his 400-page report on the president and what he was up to since the 1970s when it came to classified documents. And the bottom line is, he probably would have been prosecuted if he wasn't so old and forgetful. What's he going to do to spin that? And how is that going to remind everybody what we're actually dealing with in the White House? Mike, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How important is it for Robert Hur to come out and provide some color and possibly provide the tapes of the interviews with the former president, with the current president?
It's incredibly important. I think the whole Hur special counsel report has kind of been miscast by a lot of folks who painted him as kind of a right-wing villain for just including the line that everybody saw for themselves at the State of the Union the other week, that the president is old. He is struggling with his memory and his ability to speak and his competence. But the problem is Hur's investigation itself did not do a lot of key things, and that's what I'm advocating for Congress to press him on tomorrow. Particularly, we know that Joe Biden was communicating on a ton of pseudonym email accounts where he was using fake names, and then also burner phones. So my question is, Robert Hur, did you get those devices and email trails? Because if you didn't, were you really trying to conduct an investigation into how the president handled classified information if you didn't look at the one place where he knew he set up to hide everything? So that's why I want Congress to press him on tomorrow.
The other thing is, what I was stunned by, because I read the whole report, I was stunned by how much he did, where he got these documents dating back to when he used to, you know, go over to Europe before the fall of the wall, you know, when the Cold War was still going on. The documents that he just kept and the places in which he kept them, it negates anybody who's upset that boxes were kept by the stage in Mar-a-Lago. Are you kidding me? This guy left him wide open in a garage with a drug-addled son who was driving around in the very car that was in front of all these boxes, and bragged about having these classified documents. Why is that important to bring up? Because if he says to everybody, I am fine, I am okay, then there is absolutely no reason for him to be not to be prosecuted.
That's absolutely right. But did the investigation just occur within the garage? I think that's the key question. With Jack Smith and President Trump, you have them look going to Twitter to get all of his DMs that were sent to the president's account that day. So I want to know if Herr just spent his time in the garage or he took the investigation to places where it obviously should have gone to include these other devices that were set up purposely to evade detection. And I think if Herr did not do that, Congress has a lot of questions to ask of him, and particularly why he didn't end up charging Joe Biden. And so I think there's a temptation to just focus on the fact that Herr had that one line about President Biden's inability to, you know, recall things.
So this is going to be the month we're going to see the first trial take place. Alvin Bragg's ridiculous trial, calling out the president for what may have happened with Stormy Daniels and using misplaced campaign funds set up by Michael Cohen. Fantastic. Meanwhile, they put his CFO back into Rikers Island again. Please don't tell me justice is equal. But when we look at this first case, what should we be looking for? How it's going to play out politically. We're looking at a 3-week trial?
Yeah, that's what they're anticipating. And what's happening now, it's going to confuse a lot of people. A lot of your listeners, I know, are following these things closely. But what they're doing right now on the left through these multi-jurisdictional lawfares is they're just conditioning the public to expect that Trump is going to be put away for something at some point. That is the political impact and rationale behind all of this, separate and apart from the fact that it's basically a means to exact campaign fines on him. We're talking about $500 million that have been charged to date against one of the leading presidential candidates, the leading presidential candidate. And so Bragg is no different. And one curious thing about this that we've uncovered at the Oversight Project is Bragg's basically having white shoe law firms up in New York City run this case for him. They're not even doing this stuff out of, you know, the DA's office. They're offloading all of this stuff. And it shows you the amount of people out there that are just so chomping at the bit to get after President Trump. It includes, you know, these big law firms and the lobbyists that they represent. It's really not just a whole of government at state, federal, and local levels, but it's every institution that's lining up to get their, you know, chance here.
Which is amazing because in a city who is running in the red in expenses because of a lot of the reasons, but a lot of it has to be with the exit of a lot of high-income earners who don't want to pay taxes anymore at these rates or don't like the crime and lack of punishment. And now we have over 100,000 illegal immigrants that need full accommodations. They're going to spend all this money in a private law firm to go and dig up a case that something that happened in 2015 in an incident that happened 10 years prior to that? Does that blow your mind?
It absolutely does. I mean, you know, as an attorney, seeing the way the law is being weaponized right now is the crumbling of one of, you know, the distinguishing characteristics of the United States, which is the rule of law. And I think once we lose that at the highest levels of politics, it trickles on down. And you're already seeing that trickle down happening, whether it's some of the weaponized prosecutions that relate to, you know, January 6th at a lower level or even to other, you know, political associates of President Trump. You're seeing Peter Navarro, who's, you know, looking at going to jail this month. And so if it doesn't stop here, I got bad news. It's coming for everybody who is not aligned with, you know, kind of how the regime right now wants them to be. It's going to spread.
So the documents case, too, both lawyers and Jack Smith's team is going to be facing off in a Florida courtroom about dismissal motions. At minimum, several days of hearings will take place, giving us more of an opportunity to see where Judge Cannon stands in terms of the pace in which this is all is going to be done, because all these people, they've got to do all their research, need the highest classification of security in order to go through these top secret documents. And there's literally millions of pages. But I want you to hear what Newt Gingrich said as he sees the delays in all these cases and the motions and the lack of clarity in some areas. This is what he says he thinks is going to happen. Cut 43.
I have a hunch that the attorney general is going to pull the plug and say, you really can't try somebody in the summer and fall of a presidential election year. It's not sustainable. And I think as it sinks in, you're going to see members of the House and Senate go crazy. You're going to see governors and attorney generals go crazy. They're all going to say, this is totally unsustainable and you can't do it.
Just so you know, after he said that, Mark Levin pushed back and says, I don't think so. What do you think?
I don't think they're letting off the gas. Sure, maybe in one instance, like what you have down in Florida, where they're trying to get the case out of Judge Cannon's court because they don't like the rulings that she's been giving out, which shows a deep hypocrisy because they're largely, you know, in other cases, keeping things in D.C. where it's a 96% Democrat, you know, area. And even Mark Elias said so, that, you know, Trump can't get a fair trial in D.C., basically. But whether they pull one or maybe another just to look like they're kind of, you know, not being weaponized, that wouldn't shock me. But the overall thrust of this is we're seeing it happening across the country at every single jurisdiction. And so if they have a good chance of the case, they're going to proceed. And they got so many going on right now. They're going to, you know, just keep pressing their chances where they think they work best. But I'm with kind of whoever responded to Newt there. I'd be a little surprised.
So in Georgia, this Fani Willis has been totally disgraced. Nathan Wade was a nowhere attorney doing car accidents and wills before he started dating her. And we know, but just listen to his testimony. You know, they flat out lied under oath. So that case is probably, this judge is going to come forward by Monday, he says, and decide who's on the case and if it's going to move jurisdictions. I can't give you the X's and O's of where it goes after Fulton County or where it goes at all. But from what you know right now, do you see Wade and Willis still on this case?
I mean, absolutely not. That'd be a complete mockery. And I think even if they were to have any successful part of the case, that would instantly discredit in the public's eyes. The real question, I think, now is not whether Fani and Wade are kept on, but whether the whole office has to be taken off. And I think there's a strong argument for that, given that Wade was the head of that office. And so once you take this case away from that
Willis
office.
Willis or Wade was?
Wade was in charge. Fani Willis was the district attorney. So she's the head honcho.
Yep.
And so I think you impute her conflict to the entire office. And if you get that entire office out, that's Fulton County. And so you're moving out of one of the hardest left areas of Georgia into another area. And I could see the case being dropped at that point. That's how I see this playing out.
It would be a major win for the former president big time, because that was the one case he couldn't pardon himself from because he has every intention of winning. That would be something. And, of course, Colorado's trying to stand up their case in election interference. Excuse me, Arizona. But I don't think that dog's going to hunt either. So we'll see where all this goes and see how much money it's ultimately going to cost. The other thing I'm thinking about, Mike, is how much time he's going to take away from the stump. You have to be – in a criminal trial, don't you have to be there?
You absolutely do. And your attention's there as well in the days and weeks leading up. And not to mention the sheer size of some of the money that's being taken away from President Trump at this point. We're talking $500 million up in New York. That is nothing to scoff at. There's a reason why these fines are so big, because they're meant to just punish the campaign and his ability not only to operate with his time and attention, but also his resources. It's the biggest interference in, you know, presidential politics we've ever seen by the federal government. And, you know, even though these things are happening at the state level and at, you know, with Secretary of States or DAs, they're all being coordinated. This is what we saw with Liz Cheney and the January 6th committee. It was working with DOJ and others. We found that Fani Willis, when we looked through White House visitor logs, was up visiting with Kamala Harris for a significant period of time previously. The same thing goes with other weaponized actors, whether it's Shenna Bellows, the Secretary of State up in Maine. All these people are working together and coordinating together.
What you also have is Nathan Wade meeting in Athens because he invoiced for it with White House justice officials. So what are you doing? Why is it necessary for you to meet with them? Why do you need them? You should focus on Fulton County. Remember, Jack Smith, Fani Willis wouldn't answer. You consulted with Jack Smith about this case. She said no comment, which means the answer is clearly yes. So it's an orchestrated event to neutralize Trump or damage him. And put it this way. They might have had a plan, in my view, Mike. But don't tell me that they anticipated this type of plan. Number one, to be discovered to be complicit, even though they deny it. Number two, it helped propel him to the nomination. And even though all these cases are looming, up by 3, 4, and 5 points with 8 months to go.
I think that's absolutely right. You have something on the left now in this country where the highest and best use of any politicians or actor in the government's time is going after President Trump. And so that means you have people pushing some harebrained theories and then doing things to want to get their credit, to make sure their activity is known, doing things that could discredit the case, like going to the White House to brag about it, which appears to all of us to look at coordination that should never occur. And so it's this decentralized effort almost, which is kind of just coordinated through awareness and incentives, and it's getting really, really sloppy. And I think that the American people are getting sick of seeing their, you know, presidential politics, when it's a campaign that should be about issues, being, you know, taken down to the level of just these crazy fact patterns and prosecutions.
You talk about, I know it's on a lesser level, but I think it tells a bigger story. I think last Wednesday or Thursday, Letitia James went to get in to stand in for the mayor and offer, I guess, promotions and hand out certificates to FDNY officials. At which time, when she stepped out, everyone booed. And then it chanted, then it morphed into a Trump, Trump, Trump chant. Now the FDNY commissioner, Laura Kavanaugh, is hunting down firefighters and other staffers who booed Letitia James. They say that they're going to look at the video and find out who did it, and they should come forward and things will be easier for them. Excuse me? You're at a ceremony that has nothing to do with her. She shows up, and now you can't express that you're not happy? Do you think if Trump walked out there and they booed, they would have done anything? Now you as a firefighter can't speak up? How? What is your thoughts on this?
I mean, it's an obvious double standard. We all know that if it was them doing Trump, they'd be rewarded, not investigated. And, I mean, you look at what's happening in New York, you know, on the subways and on the streets. The fact that they're conducting an investigation to review videotapes for someone expressing a First Amendment opinion, I mean, it's absolutely outrageous. It shows you that they could solve some of the crimes and chaos in New York if they wanted to, but they want to put those attention and, you know, resources into politically embarrassing things. The people are just sick of it.
Is it true the Heritage is working hard in the anticipation that Trump wins to help give him recommendations on staffers, big positions and small?
Yes, sir. So we've stood up what's called Project 2025, which is the large effort to get a game plan that's ready for the president to review and recommendations on policy. And we're not just talking about ideas. We're talking about the paperwork that effectuates them in motion, how the regulations being written and ready to go, the executive orders, thousands and thousands of people for the president and his administration to consider for every single political appointee job, of which there's about 4,000 that the president could fill on day one. So given him as many options to consider as possible. And so the paperwork is done and in place. So there's not this lull of a period. So it's all gas, no brakes, day one. The homework's done.
You know, I was there at, you guys were kind enough to invite me down there to Sea Island to give a speech. And I heard right before I went up, I heard an announcement. If you want an application, if you want to work in the White House, we're going to be screening in such and such room. And I thought to myself, wow, what's going on here? And one of the things I remember is when Barack Obama was actually touring around President Trump, future President Trump, he said he couldn't believe that he was responsible to staff all those positions. And he, you know what? It was a very slow transition, and he paid the price for that. And you guys would be a big help. Mike Howell, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you for having me, sir.
You got it. When we come back, I'll take some calls. First time today, 1-866-408-7669. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We're late. The Palestinian protest shut down the Oscars tonight. Humanity wins.
That's Mark Ruffalo, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, of course. I'm not sure if he won anything, but he got some. People love him in the Hollywood industry, but you can't be more left and angry than him. Maybe Robert De Niro, the only other one. So there were protesters in the streets. They made everybody get out of their cars and have to walk the rest of the way to the Kodak Theater. Keep in mind, the President of the United States was late to his State of the Union address. He didn't want to bring it up. It's because of the protesters stopping him in the street. So that's it. TikTok is unleashing this whole generation of angry anti-Semitic people who are pro-Hamas, now trying to get high-profile events and get their voices heard. And too many people in that Hollywood community don't seem to understand the need for Israel to be successful and who the bad guys are. But the Oscars, I did watch some of it. I thought it was kind of interesting that Oppenheimer won. It's probably the only hit movie I've seen in a long time. And Christopher Nolan, who I had a chance to talk to, I did ask him that question about, you know, what would Oscar mean? He's like, nothing really.
Because that's what you have to say.
Right. He said, I just make my movies for the people. But if you looked at how cool he was when he got his Oscar for Best Picture, and they also got Best Director, and they got Best Supporting Actor, Lead Actor too. I'm not really sure.
Yep,
Lead Actor too. So when he got that, he actually looked like a guy like, oh, thank you, but you know, kind of getting into your grammar school Hall of Fame.
So you think okay. He was being completely sincere with you?
I do.
Wasn't just saying the line.
I do.
Nice.
I just, because I mean, you know, you could see and you just watch the body language when he's not speaking. He's like, okay, I guess I can get a little bit more money for my next movie. And he said somebody just handed him the book. He read the book and said, I'm doing this movie. And then the woman says, I'm the one who handed the rich guy the book. The rich guy handed it to Nolan. Then he does it. That's the way it works in Hollywood.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's my turn to talk. Thanks so much for being here. I hope you had a fantastic weekend. Closer and closer to doing a really looking at a legitimate spring here in New York. Although over the weekend, we got a lot of rain and now we're in the middle of a lot of wind. Whatever. I know it's close. And I, for one, like daylight savings time. I like the fact that it's going to be lighter tonight. This hour, we're going to be talking to Kate Carl Smith. And Kate Carl is a fascinating guy with the Frederick Douglass Foundation. And he is a guy that has a real perspective on why the African-American vote is no longer in the Democratics camp. He is a great, if you look into his TED Talk, if you want to be intrigued and inspired, watch it. General Jack Keane is standing by, too, about what's going on in the world, and it's about to explode. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
It is a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel. The defense of Israel is still critical, so there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have, but there's red lines that if he crosses, and he cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead.
That is what Hamas claims. Israel gets the red line. Yes, Joe Biden continues to get every major foreign policy wrong, in my view, and cave to the left. He declares Hamas can't be attacked in Rafah. Really? You shouldn't finish off a terror organization? Just let them reconfigure? It really affected the hostage talks, by the way.
Number two.
In terms of cost, that's been a major issue. And by the way, that's been a major issue in every wealthy country. This is an example of something that was largely affected by COVID. But I think there's a reason why inflation in the U.S. is lower than it is in any of the other G7
countries. It's actually not true.
It isn't true. Lost in the spin of the State of the Union was his big twist on the economy. His deficit reduction claims to have reduced inflation and vilification of the wealthy. It's about time to get a reality check. We'll do it.
Number one.
No one can explain that. Talk about disgusting. Joe Biden is more worried about using the word illegal or undocumented. The word he should use is murderer.
That would be nice. And that is the president of the United States coming out over the weekend and saying, I apologize for using the word illegal. I should say undocumented. But not mentioning the fact that he got the name wrong of the victim. So that, to me, is key. Joining us now is General Jack Keane, retired four-star general, Fox News strategic analyst, chairman of the Institute of the Study of War. General, welcome back. Your thoughts about the president of the United States giving a red line to Israel. Don't go into Rafah.
Yeah, we've said before, Brian, the president and his team should really stay out of how to conduct a military campaign against Hamas. And it's unfortunate that the disagreements that they've had are now in public spaces, and they really shouldn't be there, because by definition, that's playing right into Hamas's hands. I mean, one of the reasons I believe Hamas is resisting the ceasefire and the negotiations is because they believe the wind is at their back, given the international community's widespread condemnation of Israel. And now we have the president of the United States joining that. That strengthens Hamas's hand in the negotiations. And I'm stunned that the president cannot see that in what he's doing here by opposing what Prime Minister Netanyahu and his team is doing. And you know, for our audiences, got to understand, you know, we got to remind ourselves what is really at stake here. Iran and their proxies in the region want to destroy the state of Israel and drive the United States out of the region so they can have regional hegemon. That is what this is all about. And you have to get your head around that. And to destroy the state of Israel, what they're really talking about is erode the confidence of the Israeli people in their government and their military and their security services' capability to protect them, make them so vulnerable that they don't want to live there anymore. And there's just several million Jews living, 7-8 million Jews living in Israel. This is a very small population. And obviously, as a result of October the 7th, their vulnerability was dramatically exposed and loss of confidence in their government and their security services. What Netanyahu and his team is doing, they have to destroy Hamas. They cannot let them conduct an effective attack again. This is very much what we did going to Afghanistan. Our principal reason for going to Afghanistan was to prevent another attack on the United States. This is what Netanyahu is all about doing. He knows full well if he leaves these remaining battalions, 4 in Rafah, another 2 in the central and also northern part of Gaza, if he leaves them alone and the principal leaders who have not been killed and captured, Hamas, 18 months, 2 years from now, rearm, reorganize, reattack again, making Israel very vulnerable. He knows that is a dead-end street for him and his people. He has got to go about this business. And it's unfortunate that Hamas has held the civilian population in place. Israel has tried to move them around to avoid casualties as much as possible. But it's unprecedented for me that a civilian population is in residence at while a war is going on in urban centers. They normally flee at the sound of the gun. And there are no shelters, none, zero shelters for the Gazan people to protect themselves from aerial bombardment or artillery or any kind of attack. The tunnel system, 500 kilometers in excess of 300 miles, are designed for who? Designed for the fighters and designed for the leaders.
Yep.
And that is it. The women and the children are exposed every single day. I mean, this is diabolical and sinister. Pin the rose on Hamas.
So here's what Netanyahu told us, the prime minister told us today. Cut 58.
They're there in Rafah. This would be equivalent to saying, you know, after the Allies fought back, gone through Normandy, went through Germany, and you'd say, well, we'll leave a quarter of the Nazi army in place and we won't go into Berlin, the last stronghold. So I think that if the president means by that we should first enable the safe departure of the civilian population from Rafah before we go in, we agree with that. We don't need any prompting.
That's
if
not what he
means,
said.
Let's make sure that
but
they
that's
have,
not what he said. He doesn't want
well,
you to go
I,
in.
You know, I think you have to ask him what he said, because he agrees. He said that he agrees that we have to destroy Hamas as a fighting organization. That's what we intend to do.
Look, he's trying to spin it positively, but Benny Gantz coming over here, because they're in that war cabinet, that gives him gives Hamas a chance to think, okay, we're winning the PR war. Stopping the delaying the Oscars, delaying the State of the Union, makes them give them hope that by delaying they could get a better deal. And then the president saying what he's saying now, and the hot mic moment when he said, I'm going to have a come to Jesus meeting, that really hurts the warfare strategy, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's playing right into the hands of Hamas, strengthening their position clearly and trying to put pressure on Prime Minister Netanyahu and his team and create division within his team. I mean, witness Minister Gantz, now part of the war cabinet, coming to the United States to visit here. He's not the prime minister. Listen, if Biden is that concerned about the civilian casualties, why isn't he leading an international effort to pressure the Egyptians to set up UN refugee camps on the other side of the Gazan border in the Sinai Desert and get that to happen, much as the Syrians the Turks accepted 5 to 6 million refugees out of the war in Syria. And there was no love lost between the Turkish president, certainly, and the Syrian leader. But he certainly wanted to take care of the people, and he did that. Even the Ukrainians who fled Ukraine at the beginning of the war, 5 to 6 million, they fled into Poland. They kept them in their homes, and then they moved around Europe where they are today. Why are we not doing that? Why are we putting pressure on the government of Israel and its military capability as opposed to pressure on Hamas and also pressure on the Egyptians? I understand the Egyptians' concern about security, but I think there are ways to deal with that security with biometrics and a whole bunch of other things that we have proven in dealing with people inside a population like we did in Afghanistan and Iraq. No pressure whatsoever on the Egyptians to set up refugee camps, which would be a huge safety valve, you know, for the Gazan people.
But they don't want any part of the Palestinians because they created havoc in their country. But yet the queen of Jordan is Palestinian. But they, when the Palestinians come into these countries, they create chaos, and they don't like the, you know, they don't like to be destabilized. And they're whatever type of power base that, you know, the Egyptians are dealing with, and the Jordan is somewhat unsteady. As we switch over to Ukraine, here's what Lindsey Graham said could be, he thinks, a fix to the standoff when it comes to funding. Cut 28.
We're $34 trillion in debt. Nobody wants to help Ukraine more than I do. But President Trump is trying to do two things here. Help an ally, but tell the American people, pay us back if you can. I think most Americans would like to help Ukraine, but the idea of giving and never being repaid should be off the table. He mentioned this to me, I think, playing golf. Why don't we make it a loan? Well, we did that in World War II with Britain. So when you're $34 trillion in debt, you need to be thinking about the American people, just not allies. So
how about that?
Well, look, I mean, well, are we going to fund Ukraine or not? I mean, what we're really talking about here is arms and munitions. So the American people understand what is happening here. And if you're talking about economic or financial aid, yes, certainly a loan is fine. A percentage of that that the Europeans are given is on a loan basis. And as the senator indicated, there's precedent for it. But the real issue here is arms and munitions, all right? And we're going to give them our arms and munitions. That is out of our what? Legacy stock. So our people understand these are weapons we're not using, but we could use if war broke out. And we have them in warehouses.
Yep.
They're part of our stockage. So we're giving those weapons to the Ukrainians. The money that is set aside for arms and munitions then goes to buy back new capability, either the same weapon that's improved or a different weapon from who? From our defense industrial base. That is what the money is. So there's no loan there. That is money that needs to be paid to the defense industry, mm-hmm. and we get improved stockage, and it's better for us. We get better weapon systems in our defense industrial base, which is struggling as it is. In terms of a loan for economic or financial assistance, that's another issue, and I think that's fine. The Europeans are doing it. But there's a lot of confusion about what is really taking place here. Here's the point. The majority of the American people are supporting funding Ukraine. The majority of the Senate is supporting funding Ukraine, bipartisan. The majority of the House is supporting Ukraine, bipartisan. But yet we can't get it done because of a very vocal minority that is holding this up. And that is really sad to see.
Well, I mean, President Trump is the one that now he's going to think about alone, but if Trump came out and said it, even though he's the former president, it would certainly help. I don't know. I don't mind leverage to get something done. I think it's the way Washington works. But how could we possibly be divided on Ukraine aid? How did that happen? And this drives me nuts. Turns out the F-16 should be there by July. Romania has been training a handful. They have a training center waiting. They're just waiting for the jets to arrive and the Ukrainians to show up. 12 should be ready by July, and they have some pilots trained 10 months over in Denmark, the UK, and the US. So wait to if Ukraine can hold out to July, they might have a mini air force.
Yeah, I mean, we're aggressively training Ukrainians inside our own country, and that's progressing. I was talking to the chief of staff of the Air Force the other day about it. That program is well underway. The Romanian program, the pilots don't know the reason, but they have not materialized for training yet. There's 61 F-16s that will be provided by the Netherlands and Belgium. Obviously, these are airplanes made in the United States, but many countries around the world have purchased those. It's the Air Force and the Defense Department has not decided yet whether they're going to provide F-16s or not. Obviously, they're training pilots. There's plenty of F-16s to get into the hands of the Ukrainians, but like everything else that has gone into them with advanced weapons, whether it's tanks, whether it's HIMARS, whether it's long-range missiles like ATACMS, all of it has been delayed, and none of it has showed up at the time that they were requesting it, so it can influence decisively the operations they are conducting. And the F-16 is no exception to that. I hope they show up in the summer.
Wow.
And they can start using air support. What we're going to see, if this support dries up and they don't get the air defense systems and the artillery munitions and others, they'll begin an air campaign against cities in Ukraine. Up to this date, has not been successful to break the will of the people, nor has it been successful to destroy their energy infrastructure. It has destroyed some of it, but has not shut them down. They will begin to be successful against these cities. The casualties will go up against, in terms of the Ukrainian people, the energy infrastructure will shut down, and they will be able to make more ground success using their own air power to support their ground operations, because there's no air defense systems in the numbers required to stop what we've seen. Mm-hmm. You've seen unbelievable success that the Ukrainians have had. 75-80% of the missiles and rockets that have been fired at their cities and their energy infrastructure, they've knocked down. That will stop because they're just running out of the missiles and the rockets to do that to defend themselves.
It's maddening,
that's
General.
That's the tragedy that's in front of us.
General Jack Keane, always great. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too, Brian.
Thank you. That's the reality. Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And I think that the frustration there is, you know, in today's day and age, if you look at this case, you've got blood. Blood means DNA. You have to get all that analyzed. That takes time. You've got phones. You've got license plate readers. You've got video. All of that evidence has to be culled through. And that's just some of the evidence. That takes time. What we were able to do is we were able to put the concealing and the tampering case together rather quickly, 7 days after the bodies were found. But that's not enough under New York state law, again, because we can't consider dangerousness.
So what Ray Turney is talking about in Suffolk County, New York, is a body of these four people were found with hacksaws and were linked directly to the hacking up of two dead people. They saw it to be two friends. And there's some three-way, some tryst and cheating, whatever's going on. But they chopped up these people into body parts, threw them in the park. Was all discovered, and they got out on bail with ankle bracelets. And when Governor Hoke, they said, listen, Ray Turney said, listen, I can't do anything because of the discovery process and bail reform. And the governor blamed Ray Turney for not doing a strong enough case. Are you kidding me? Hacks on body parts? I'm thinking jail. You?
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
The reason I think the Democratic Party and Mr. Biden, President Biden, is losing black votes is they only care about black people every 4 years. They come into our neighborhoods and say, we're going to make stuff better. We're going to do this, do this, do this. And then finally, us black people are like, you know, man, other than my ability to dunk a basketball, all my neighborhoods are still the same. Our schools are still the same. And that's why I think black people are leaving disappointed in the Democratic Party, because I ain't gonna lie, I voted Democratic every time just because I thought it was gonna help black people and poor people. Because black people and poor white people, they're in the same boat.
Charles Barkley making his comments on his CNN show and everywhere else. He also made some very hostile comments to people who were wearing T-shirts, a black person wearing a T-shirt with Donald Trump's mugshot on it. Kay Carl Smith joins us now, author of Telling Conservatives the Truth and the innovative behind the Frederick Douglass Republican Engagement Strategy. Kay Carl, welcome.
Hey, Brian, how you doing? Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, no problem. I know this is right up your alley. What are your thoughts about what Barkley said?
I mean, who can get in Charles Barkley's head and analyze? It's kind of difficult. I don't know any psychologist that can do that. So, you know, there's a little bit of truth to what he has to say. And then again, it's concerning. I think there's a bigger picture behind the scene that we need to talk about, because using that shirt with Trump, that's not why I'm voting for Trump. It's not about me caring about how he's being discriminated against. I'm interested in his values and his policies, how it's going to affect my pocketbook and my family. So blacks are leaving the Democrat Party not because of that T-shirt. I think it's more important than that. It's all about values. I think that's what the discussion should be, which is, I think, is going to be more lasting and get away from this personality politics, because after Trump is gone by the side, we still got to win elections, and you can't rely on another T-shirt to get the black vote.
Frederick Douglass was a Republican. Booker T. Washington was a Republican. Martin Luther King Jr. was a Republican. You're a conservative. So you're trying to bring back that mindset, correct?
Yeah. Oh, well, let me say this, too. I talked to Alveda King about this. Dr. King wasn't independent. He was never a registered Republican. He voted Republican, but he was independent because he wanted to stay in the middle. But my focus is to help the Republican Party recapture its political distinction and understand that the black and brown vote is crucial to winning elections, especially in those urban core areas like Atlanta, Detroit, Milwaukee, and Phoenix, and Philadelphia. We have the right message, but our messaging is ineffective. We got to fix that.
Right.
And I think we have the answer.
Just to finish off, Barkley said this the day after.
When Donald Trump compares his plight with that of the black person, that is what I had a problem with. Mm-hmm. Now, I do want to say this. I want to make it perfectly clear. If you're a black person and you're wearing a Donald Trump mugshot, you are a freaking idiot. And I'm only saying freaking idiot because they won't let me say what I really want to say. But you can figure it out. It starts with an F. I'm not going
to
go around punching people.
Yeah, that's what
that violence is never the answer.
Exactly.
But my message is very clear. If you think Donald Trump is under the same umbrella as black people, you're just stupid.
What's your reaction to that?
My reaction is I don't like how the operatives and political strategists of Donald Trump using a gimmick to get the black vote. Come talk to us about values and policies. But the problem is Republicans don't know how to do that. They use the wrong words when they talk to us. They don't know how to talk to the black community. So they have to resort to me, this is a gimmick. Because, again, I'm not voting for President Trump, which I will vote for him, because him being discriminated against. It's all about the policies. And so I think Republicans and any Republican candidate need to learn how to become a better messenger of liberty and articulate those values to not just the black community, but universally, so we can turn this country around and save this nation.
Right. So let me give you some stats and tell me what you think. CBS says Donald Trump now has 23% of the black vote. It was, as you know, Mitt Romney had 8, McCain had 9, Trump had 13. Now it's as high as 10 points higher. And NBC says Trump's now got, in 2021, he had 13% of the black vote, according to NBC. And now in 2023, he's got 19% of the black vote. Do you think that carries through? Do you think we're just looking at 4 years against 4 years?
The Democrat Party has done an excellent job to give Trump all where people have the sympathy for President Trump. I think that 23% can be much higher if the Republicans and Trump operation know how to effectively improve his brand and articulate the message of liberty where the left has no answer for it. And you know, Brian, the way I articulate that,
by leveraging the life and power and values of Frederick Douglass. That's how you can do that.
So, but how do you put that in practical terms?
Get into the writings of the Liberty Message of Douglass. Understand that the word conservative, number one, has a racist connotation. Stop using the word conservative to identify yourself politically and leverage the moniker Frederick Douglass Republican and understand what content comes behind that phrase to articulate what you mean by that. So it's all about leveraging the Liberty Message of Douglass because that's the answer to save this nation, and the left has no answer for it.
So what is I did not know racist conservatism has a racist connotation to it.
Oh, yeah. It really started. You got to go back to the 1960s when Goldwater ran for the presidency. His nickname was Mr. Conservative. He wrote a book called The Conscience of a Conservative, but he voted against the civil rights legislation. I was growing up in Alabama at that time. I can remember hearing Goldwater's name, the word conservative, the word Republican used in the same sentence. And that's when the word conservative started having a racist connotation because Goldwater sided, even though he voted against the legislation based on constitutional grounds, he in fact sided with the racist Democrats. And so that's been a problem all this time. Even Rush Limbaugh agreed that we got to stop using the word conservative because now our young people today are going to college being taught that conservatives are racist and they're Nazis. So we got a brand problem we got to overcome. And then Douglass, he has to help us do that.
Here is what Sarah Fagan said on Meet the Press yesterday about what's happening right now with the electorate, even without you doing what you're saying. Cut five.
Well, I think it's a couple reasons. I think primarily it's economic. I mean, if we're coming out of this very high inflationary period. It's cooled, but still, you know, food costs, housing costs, these are higher percentages of people's take-home budgets. And so if you're a working-class American of any color, you have really been impacted by that. And so voters overwhelmingly consider the Trump economy to have worked better for them than the Biden economy. And so that's affected Black Americans.
Well, I agree with that wholeheartedly because of the policy of this current administration, people are feeling the pinch. They're feeling the misery, gas prices, food prices. They're seeing it. But that's why a lot of Blacks have left the Democrat Party, now become unaffiliated. So that's where we got to go after to win these elections. And so you're exactly right. It's an opportunity we can break the backbone of the Democrat Party forever once we learn how to become more articulate in the message of liberty.
We're talking to Kay Carl Smith right now. Kay Carl, I've seen your TED Talk. Now you've come out with your very powerful message. What's been the reaction throughout people that don't have a chance to know you in the Black community?
People love it because I'm articulating the liberty message of Frederick Douglass, and I'm sharing what Douglass had to say. And so when you share the liberty message of Frederick Douglass, think about it, Brian. How can you win an argument with a runaway slave by his admiration of the founding fathers, his respect for the U.S. Constitution, his idea about economic prosperity and free speech, religious liberty, right of people keeping bare arms, and parental school choice? These are things that Douglass wrote and spoke about. That resonates with people. That's why I contend, Brian, Frederick Douglass is America's greatest writer, speaker, liberty messenger. When it comes to those things I just shared with you, we got to be wise and leverage it because the most effective liberty message to defeat Marxism is with Frederick Douglassism.
Yeah, let's see. We'll see where that goes. I also know in New York, they are now having put a commission in place to study slave reparations. They say that it's time to find out how much we owe. African Americans is about 500,000 that date back to whose roots go back to Africa or the Caribbean that might be open for some type of remuneration. And we know in California, they awarded $360,000 per person. Ultimately, it would cost $800 billion, and no one's touched it. No one knows how to finance it. No one knows how it's commissioned. Would reparations help anything?
You know, if we're going to have reparations, the first way, the people who need to pay is the Democrat Party. We wouldn't have slavery if it wasn't for the Democrat Party. So that's who needs to pay. I don't focus on reparations. I got this from reading and studying Douglass's life. What we advocate is discover your God-given gifts, discover your God-given talents, and take that obsession and make it a profession. And in the midst of slavery in the racism in Douglas's time, which is worse then it is now, Douglas excelled. And so he didn't wait around for reparation. He took his gifts and talents, and it made room for him. A lot of people don't realize when Douglas passed away in 1895, this brother had $300,000 in savings, which is over $10 million in today's money. He wasn't waiting on reparations. He discovered God giving gifts and talents, and that would propel him to change the quality of life for himself and his family.
Yeah. So, I mean, have you talked to the Trump team?
I've been trying to. They need to give me a call. I got things I want to share with them. So if you can help out with that, it'd be appreciated.
Yeah, they should be listening. Who knows? They could be, especially here. There's a huge group in New York right now because they're going to be on trial for a while in New York who are trying to destroy him in many ways. So, Kate Carl, if people want to see some of your talks and what you've written, where do we go?
The best way to go, Brian, is just come to my website. I normally don't publish my speaking events in advance because the left really don't like what I have to say because they have no answer for it. But come to my website. That's kcarlinc.com, kcarlinc.com, and we'll make contact with you and contact us, and we can share that privately.
Kate Carl, go get him. Thanks so much. Appreciate your insight today.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate it.
You got it. So, listen, at the top of the hour, I'm going to be heading over to Outnumbered and have a chance to be the guy and talk more about what's going on here. Also, coming up next, I don't talk a lot about entertainment, but I did want to go over some night at the what happened at the Oscars last night because it broke into the real news world. It wasn't nearly as political as many people thought it would be. I think they're getting smarter about that. They're trying to keep it to the movies, awards, and entertainment, but it still didn't stop it from sneaking into some speeches as Jimmy Kimmel got all into responding to the former president's Truth Social about him. Top of the hour. Top of the hour on Outnumbered. Next, we talk Oscars. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
How much do the awards mean to you?
Not much. I mean, we make the films for audiences, and it's great to have a film like this come out in the summer, which is when people are really primed to go see things on the big screen and hopefully have an exciting experience, yeah. And that's what we do it for.
And Christopher Nolan, guess what? You won Best Director, Best Picture, Best Lead Actor, Best Supporting Actor for your movie Oppenheimer, and was a minute of a movie strike. In the middle of a Hollywood strike, and the only people that could speak about it were directors, so none of the talent could go out. So Christopher Nolan, who's a celebrity director, came out, and that's the question I asked him. It made me wonder, since it was Oscar night last night, if there's more to know.
More to know.
All right, here we go. Let's take a look at the Oscars right now. And first off, though it was a pretty good night. It went on way too long. It looked like Jimmy Kimmel, I don't know, was just exhausted. His eyes were barely even open. But there was one moment where he walked out on stage and he realized he got a Truth Social that he wanted to read out loud. Listen.
I just got a review, and has there ever been a worse host than Jimmy Kimmel at the Oscars? His opening was that of a less than average person trying too hard to be something which he is not and never can be. Get rid of Kimmel and perhaps replace him with another washed up but cheap ABC talent. See if you can guess which former president just posted that on Truth Social. Anyone? No? Well, thank you, President Trump. Thank you for watching. I'm surprised you're still watching. Isn't it past your jail time?
And the crowd loved it right after that. So it was a decent comeback after. It was good for him to run and do it, just like his show. But he is the most... He and Stephen Colbert are obviously making a living off anti-Trump jokes.
I do, but also, wasn't it a little savvy of Trump to post that, knowing now he's getting more, like, you know, attention during the Oscars?
That's a good point, too. How about this? Truth Social, which is now about to be bought, and could pay him $4 billion. And now, if he becomes president, you know how valuable that's going to be? How smart he was to stay off Twitter and all this other stuff after they kicked him off?
He's personally only on Truth Social. We'll see his campaigns on the other platforms, though, because they still want to get the word out.
So not everything was apolitical. One was political. Jonathan Glazer, who's Jewish, zone of interest director, makes a controversial statement on Israel. Cut 51.
All our choices were made to reflect and confront us in the present.
not to say look what they did then, rather look what we do now. Our film shows where dehumanization leads at its worst. It shaped all of our past and present. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October the... Whether the victims of October the 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack on Gaza, all are victims of this dehumanization. How do we resist?
I don't know what that means, but he did a whole thing on the Holocaust. I guess he doesn't want Israel to exist because the Palestinians, if you really want to go back in history, the Palestinians left the area. Now they want it back. Now they want all of it. Now they don't want a two-state solution. Then when given Gaza, they make it into a war zone and make an unfathomable attack. So this guy is Jewish, and he wanted everyone to know that he does not approve of what's going on right now. And listen to the applause. No doubt about it. They approve of that.
Agreed.
Something else I wanted to bring up is Mark Ruffalo. He was one of the many celebrities that had to get out of his car and walk to the Kodak Theater because of the Palestinians, pro-Hamas protesters. Cut 52.
We're late. The Palestinian protest shut down the Oscars tonight. Humanity wins.
So humanity wins. So he's glad to be inconvenienced because, of course, he can never side with something America's doing, and that is supporting an ally. And that is why we have President Biden wavering when it comes to his support of Israel, demanding they don't go into Rafah. Nobody wants death and destruction, but it's all on Hamas.
It was so humane what happened on October 7th.
Right. It was fantastic. So that's a quick look at what happened at the Oscars last night. I think a couple of things are evident, too. They wanted to stay away from politics. They know that it's problematic. I don't think they were trying to make headlines last week. Between the Will Smith thing that happened a couple of years ago and how politically polarizing everyone is, and I think how fatigued most people are about going through Donald Trump and what you think. We already know where they think. The other thing is, it seems like Al Pacino lost his mind. He walks out to read Best Film and doesn't read any of the contenders.
But apparently it was planned that way because they had already highlighted all of the 10 best pictures throughout the course of
the
Oscars.
So he wasn't supposed to read them?
He wasn't supposed to read them, but it came off extra awkward.
It was so weird. By the way, is that the best he can look at this point?
Do you think
he's the best actor? I hear he's a good guy, unlike Robert De Niro. But it, to me, like, just dress up and look the... I don't know. Can he comb his hair?
That's his
look. He's a brand new dad.
That's him.
What do you think, it's Dog Day Afternoon again?
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.